Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Tuesday, January 21st. I'm Hannah Floor. On his first day back in office, President Trump yesterday signed an executive order that aims to undo most of his predecessor's work on Alaska energy and environmental issues. The Alaska order was among dozens Trump signed at the Resolute desk in the Oval Office.
First, we have Alaska, sir. This is an executive order relating to unleashing Alaska's potential as an energy reservoir for the entire nation.
And what about ANWR?
I believe that would be included in aspects of the order.
So we're opening up ANWR.
The order calls for new leases in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and much more. It says the government will prioritize a gas pipeline, rewrite development rules for the National Petroleum Reserve Alaska, facilitate a road corridor for King Cove, and toss the Biden administration's block on the Ambler Road. It covers nearly every major land use controversy in Alaska this century, but it does not mention the proposed Pebble Mine, at least not by name. Alaska's all-Republican delegation to Congress praised the order, but not Trump's other Alaska announcement, that he wants to restore the name McKinley to the mountain now named Denali. Many of his actions will likely be challenged in court. Petersburg's Borough Assembly will decide tonight if the borough can issue bonds to fund improvements to its public school facilities. Approving the bonds would let the borough take up to $3.5 million in debt, which it would repay through property tax increases. Proceeds from the bonds would be used to pay for things like security upgrades and roof repairs in Petersburg School District. The school's maintenance department previously reported leaks in the auditorium and holes in the roof, with more areas deteriorating from age and weather damage. The bond has already been approved by Petersburg voters during the local election last October. Since then, assembly members have unanimously approved the bond authorization twice, and they're expected to take a third and final vote on it this evening. Petersburg's Borough Assembly will meet tonight at 6 o'clock in the assembly chambers. KFSK will broadcast the meeting live, and the agenda for the meeting is on the borough website, as well as our website, kfsk.org. Police arrested two Sitkin residents after a drug bust turned into a high-speed car chase that ended in front of a local school. Earlier last week, investigators from the Sitka Police Department and the Southeast Alaska Cities Against Drugs Task Force, or CCAD, intercepted a package sent by U.S. mail containing just over half a pound of methamphetamine. On January 16th, investigators tracked the package to a storage unit on Edelin Way, where they made contact with 37-year-old Adam Fondell. According to charging documents, Fondell fled the scene, striking an officer and an occupied patrol vehicle in the process. In a press release Thursday, the Sitka Police Department said that an officer discharged a single shot at the suspect's vehicle. Police said no serious injuries were reported. The name of the officer who discharged the weapon has not been released, and police could not be reached for comment by press time. According to the Alaska Department of Public Safety, the Alaska Bureau of Investigation is investigating the officer's use of lethal force. After a car and foot chase, police detained Fondell about 10 feet from the doors of Sitka High School. Police also arrested 38-year-old April McLaughlin on felony drug charges for delivering the drugs to Fondell at the Bayview Pub. Late Friday, police announced the arrest of a third suspect in the case, who fled the high school after stealing a car and was later detained. As of press time, the name of the third suspect was not released. Both Fondell and McLaughlin are being held at the Sitka jail on bail set at $200,000 and $60,000, respectively. Fondell has been charged with three felony drug counts, and McLaughlin has been charged with one felony drug count. Sitka's Land Trust cottages use a state-of-the-art model to create affordability, and now a high school construction class is using old-world skills to improve the neighborhood. Students are building storage sheds for every home using locally sourced lumber. KCAW's Robert Woolsey stopped by Sitka's Career and Technical Education Workshop to talk with the student carpenters and the adults who put the project together, and sent this audio postcard.
We're building sheds for those houses that were recently built. And so this is all funded by a grant, I'm pretty sure, from the Land Trust, all this material that we're using. And then so they give us the materials, and we just give them a finished product.
How's it been working with locally milled lumber?
I feel like it makes me feel like Sitka is more independent by using their own lumber instead of relying on other people's lumber. And it's just a little harder to work with because it's all rough cut, so it's not straight. So we have to make the cut straight and make everything flat and plumb and flush.
The Alaska Community Foundation gave the grant. It was for $45,000. And it was for 3 semesters of work, which will wrap up in May. And there's a possibility that we can re-upped in order to get a total of 14 little sheds for the neighborhood. The Alaska Community Foundation has a local branch, the Sitka Legacy Foundation, and this is just the largest and most interesting of the projects that we've funded through them.
It's a very small footprint. It's the size of a sheet of plywood, 4x8, and really the intention is just those homes are so tight to give those folks a chance to put their Costco totes and their crab pots and their strollers and their bikes up out of the rain outside. So we were able to kind of come up with an architectural design on the outside that allowed us to use some of the spruce lap siding that was milled in Tenneke by Gordon Chu, and then put a little flavor on top of that with some good old Sitka T111 that gave us kind of that vertical batten look.
What grade are you in?
Sophomore.
What do you think your educational plans are for the next couple of years and then beyond?
Just try to take these classes throughout high school and then college. Going to try to do some type of construction management program or business.
Has working with Tongass Lumber had any sort of impact on you? Would you like to use this material more in the future?
Yes and no. It's definitely cool to be using the wood, but like lumber that you buy from the store is definitely a little nicer. It's like not as twisted, and it's just easier to cut and easier to work with.
You know, I've worked with yellow cedar locally milled. I've worked with alder. The spruce that Gordon does really is a good product. It's really very stable. It's really very predictable. It's something that I can have success with students. We're interested in seeing, you know, Gordon and his son continue to produce product and other mills in the region try to replicate what we got there.
This project's worked really well for us because it's helping us figure out what we can use our local timber resource for, what the opportunities are and what the constraints are for sourcing local lumber. And we're training youth to be on career pathways to do construction work. And we need a lot of workers in Sitka to do construction work, and there's a dearth of those. So putting them through this program and that they're either going into the workforce or able to work on their own homes is a real good thing for us.
Vance Bolovich.
And Vance, your family is in the construction business, correct?
Yes, my dad owns CBC Construction.
Colton McGraw.
McGraw is a familiar name in the construction industry here. What's your place in the McGraw?
Chris McGraw is my dad. Chuck McGraw is my grandpa. He owns MCG Constructors.
Okay, yeah. And are you thinking about getting into the construction
team? I am, yes.
Do you want to be part of the hands-on construction?
I want to be a part of probably both, honestly, like part of the family business, and then I also want to work in the field as well.
One of the fun things from this semester, I had a lot of names in there that are synonymous with construction in Sitka. Bolovich, McGraw, Martins, a lot of sons of contractors who work professionally. And, you know, it's fun to work with that crew because it was obvious that they've worked their whole life. I didn't have to teach them how to work. I just had to teach them the basics of carpentry and construction. And they were eager to go to work and apply those skills. But we kind of dangled a free breakfast at the Nugget in front of them in the last month. And it came down to the very last day. And I said, the land trust is buying breakfast at the Nugget if you guys can get this thing wrapped up. And, you know, at the end of the semester, kids kind of finish up in other classes. They've taken their finals. They've got a day or two where they're just kind of killing until the semester ends. And Vance Bolovich was down every class period for the last 2 days of the semester, making sure that his shed got finished so that we could get to the Nugget and have our breakfast.
Are you thinking about a career in construction?
It's a second choice. My first choice is to go to college and then dental school and then be a dentist.
That was an audio postcard from Sitka's career and technical education class with the voices of students Vance Bolovich and Colton McGraw, teacher Mike Vieira, Sitka Community Land Trust Director Randy Huey, and Sitka Conservation Society Director Andrew Tomes. The Aleut community of St. Paul Island announced Friday that it has signed an agreement with the federal government aimed at jointly managing the waters surrounding the Bering Sea Island. Tribal Council President John Melavita says the agreement with the National Marine Fisheries Service is a step toward environmental stewardship through a partnership between the tribe and the national government. It's also a recognition of the Uanga people's historical connection to the region.
It's really the start of working together on matters, you know, related to sustainable management and stewardship of marine resources under NIMS jurisdiction surrounding St. Paul.
Federal appointees administer the National Marine Fisheries Service, which is run by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Melavita says this agreement protects the conservation work they've done under the outgoing administration of President Joe Biden against the possible changes under President Trump.
This MOU is kind of a way to kind of capture the work that we've done with this current administration to keep things moving forward with any future administrations.
The agreement outlines a framework for managing fishery marine resources, including the inclusion of tribal proposals and knowledge in fisheries policies. Its implementation will require coordination with other entities, including the North Pacific Fishery Management Council and the state of Alaska, to ensure compliance with federal and state law. A key public sector union and some Democratic state lawmakers are calling on Governor Mike Dunleavy to release the results of a $1 million study on how competitive the state salaries are. As Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, the study was originally due last summer, and lawmakers say that delays will complicate efforts to write the state budget.
It's no secret that the state of Alaska has struggled to recruit and retain qualified staff for state jobs. An average of 16% of state positions remain unfilled as of November, according to figures obtained by the Anchorage Daily News. That's about twice the vacancy rate generally thought of as healthy, according to legislative budget analysts.
The solution, it's not rocket science.
That's Heidi Dragas, the executive director of the union representing a majority of rank-and-file state of Alaska employees. And the solution, as she sees it, better retirement and, of course, better pay.
This is a problem that has been plaguing state government for years, and it is only getting worse.
Dragas says the large number of open jobs is hobbling key state services, and Alaskans are feeling the effects, says Senator Bill Willikowski, an Anchorage Democrat.
We've been unable to fill prosecutor jobs. We've been unable to fill snowplow operator jobs. Teaching jobs, of course, on the local level, clerk jobs for the courts, which backs up our court system, and so on and so forth.
It's been a problem for years. So in 2023, the legislature put $1 million in the state budget to fund a study looking at whether the state's salaries are adequate. The results were supposed to come in last June. Willikowski says he's been hearing from constituents looking for the study's findings. He's asked for it, and so far, he says he still hasn't seen it.
And this is just dragged on and on and on, and now we're 7 months later and we still have nothing, and they're refusing to release any documents at all. And that's very troubling, because this is a critical topic that we need before we go ahead and go into session.
People outside the government have been asking too. Blogger Dermot Cole filed a public records request for any drafts of the study that have been completed, but state officials have thus far declined to release them. They say they're exempt from disclosure under Alaska's public records laws. The governor's administration says the most recent draft is allowed to stay under wraps under the executive communication and deliberative process privileges, which protect some documents related to internal decision-making in the executive branch. And earlier drafts are exempt from disclosure too, the administration says, because they've been superseded. To Willikowski, that's absurd.
It's laughable. It's wild. That's not how the process works.
Dunleavy's office told state agency heads in December that the final study likely wouldn't be done until the middle of the legislative session, which runs January to May. His deputy chief of staff says they're looking for more data. Willikowski, though, says he's concerned the Dunleavy administration is trying to manipulate the study's conclusions.
Look, we didn't fund $1 million to get some politically massaged study. We funded $1 million so that we could get an objective organization to go ahead and look at this problem and to tell us what the numbers look like, to tell us how competitive we are.
Senator Mike Schauer, a Wasilla Republican, though, says he's less concerned. He says he'd like to see the results, but he also sees the value in waiting to see the full picture.
I think that in this particular case, it is important that the administration or even the legislature or the judicial branch, all of which commission studies, ensure that they are appropriately finished, vetted, you know, QC'd. Sometimes you don't get back everything you were looking for. Sometimes you want more.
But majority caucus lawmakers say they're not interested in waiting. Incoming House State Affairs Committee Chair Ashley Carrick, a Fairbanks Democrat, says she plans to take a look at the issue as the session begins.
I think that there are a lot of questions that are unanswered, and we will be spending the first week of the House State Affairs Committee in part addressing the lack of a response from the Department of Administration.
Drangus, the public employee union leader, sent a letter to her membership asking them to sign a petition calling on the state to release the drafts of the study. It quickly amassed more than 1,000 signatures. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
For KFSK, I'm Hannah Flohr.